we're having family home evening at the Hall's house. And Dennis Erlener and David and Karen are back on vacation from Chicago and New Jersey, respectively. And Charlotte and Nancy are here. Ginger's on her mission in Scotland. And it's August 6, 1973. And Dad, we just finished asking six questions, these first six questions to Mom, and on the other tape, and now we're letting her catch her breath, and Dad just came back from a ball game with his priest, and so now we're going to give it to him.
So you have Mom on two sides on that other one?
One side.
Just one side.
Well, this is the other side of the same tape?
No, we decided to start a new tape.
I just telling Karen that it only takes you half as much tape.
Oh, we might get him wound up. Okay, we made Mom take a big oath that she'd tell all the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, unless it proved to be embarrassing.
But, it did.
Yeah, but
tell you
we'll just assume you're not going to tell any lies here. Okay, let's start at the beginning. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your ancestry and where they came from?
Well, my father, Howard Hall, was born in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. June 22nd, 1887. Mm-hmm. His parents were Henry C. Hall and Mary Ann Woodcock. And offhand, I've forgotten where they were born. Henry C. Hall's father was also Henry C. Hall. And this first Henry C. Hall, Naomi McElroy. Anyway, this first Henry C. Hall in Ohio somewhere was the first. They used to have mule-drawn streetcars, and he was a driver of one of those first streetcars where they pulled the streetcar with a mule. And the Halls were sort of in the railroad business from that time on. His son, Henry C. Hall, was working on the railroad and then came to Pocatello, Idaho to work on the railroad, and was transferred from Pocatello, which was a rail center, to Ogden, Utah, which was a larger rail center. And somehow later on, the second Henry C. Hall, who was the father of Howard Hall, got into the transfer business. But my father started work on the railroad too at a young age. He quit school in the fifth grade, as many people did in those days, and worked as what was called a call boy on the railroad beginning at age 11. Now, what a call boy did would go around and wake up the engine crews. You know, the switching and trains going in and out of the yard. You see, Ogden was the largest rail center west of Omaha, Nebraska. And I guess they didn't have telephones in those days. They weren't too common. And my dad would know the apartments or the homes where they lived, and he'd have to go there and wake up the crews. You'd have thought they'd had an alarm clock or something.
Well, no, they didn't know when they would go out.
Well, I suppose maybe that's it. Maybe there were unexpected calls and trains would be late and whatnot. Anyway, that was his first job on the railroad. And he continued working on the railroad and moved up the line, becoming brakeman and fireman, the various things. And this is what he was doing when he met my mother at age around 31 or 32. 31, I guess. I don't know why Dad didn't get married earlier. I don't know why my mother had opportunity to get married that I remember her talking about, but she didn't like the guys that wanted to marry her. In fact, she had to run away from one. He chased her to Idaho and then chased her back to Salt Lake. She couldn't get rid of him. But I never heard my dad talk about any former girlfriends or anything. I never did. But my mother, had become a bookkeeper. She'd gone to Henniger's Business College, or LDS Business College. I think it was Henniger's. And had learned bookkeeping. She also learned sewing in one of these sewing colleges. Maybe the business colleges, kind of trade schools they used to have in those days, probably taught sewing. Anyway, she took sewing and learned sewing and bookkeeping both very well, and I think she did both for a living at various times.
I didn't remember that she
did. Oh, yeah, she was a good seamstress. She learned all the tailoring and everything else. Maybe not like your mother, but my mother made, as boys, see, there were five of us, she made all her clothes. Shirts, pants, the works. Up until, well, she made suits, too. As a matter of fact, Bishop D. Mick used to give my mom his old suits. He worked, he was
Fred
a top salesman at Fred M. Nye. And he always looked well-dressed. You know, he had on the latest suits and new suits. And he would occasionally give his discarded suits to my mom, and she would cut them down to size to fit us boys. Clear up until I was age 18 or 19, she was doing that. So she was a good seamstress.
What a job.
But anyway,
like that in your
she was working in Wilson's Grocery Store, which was on Wall Avenue at approximately, this is a guess, 27th Street, past 28th Street, Wall Avenue. And at this time, my grandfather and grandmother Hall were living on Benford Street, north side of the street, I've forgotten the number, about two houses from the corner of Wall and Benford. This was a fairly nice home for the day, but it was down in the railroad section of town. But Negroes lived there, Negro porters and other people, but my grandfather lived next door to Negroes all his life, I guess. There was not all that much segregation. I suppose in that day that Negro porters were fairly high-class people. I just read a Reader's Digest article about Negro porters, and they sort of helped advance their people because they got out and saw what the rest of the world was like, and in its own day, that was a fairly high station in life, the Negro porter. But they lived all around there. The Negro people who worked on the railroad were just behind him and to the side of him. But the Negroes lived in houses just as nice as my grandpa's, as I remember, because I'd been in some of those houses. But it was a much nicer house than I ever lived in as a kid, my grandfather Paul's house. They had moved there from Pacific Avenue. They had first lived and I believe had built a house on Pacific Avenue, but that was later taken over by all the railroad tracks, huge switching yards that they built in Ogden, so they had moved to Benford. Well, somewhere along the line, my dad had saved most of his money. As a matter of fact, in those days, if you were still living at home, you gave almost all, well, you gave all your earnings to your parents. I remember my father saying that, and golly, he must have been in his 20s, that he would just bring his pay home and turn it over to his mother. And one day, he bought a friend of his and himself a bottle of soda pop out of the pay, and his mom noticed that 10 cents missing when he got home and got a scolding for it.
Wow.
But anyway, my dad must have earned an awful lot of money between age 11 and age 32 when he got married. When he got married, he didn't have anything because he'd been giving it to his parents that whole time. But with that money, I guess Grandpa Hall had been saving at least some of what Dad brought home. My grandfather formed a transfer business. Transfer business in that day was trucking. It was local trucking mainly and moving. Well, I guess it was not so local because I've heard my dad talk about trucking into Idaho and trucking into Wyoming. But he made my dad a partner in the business. But I guess he was a non-owning partner. I have a picture. The business was located on 25th Street. 25th Street never did have too good a reputation in Ogden because it had
Oh, it got a terrible reputation.
Drinking and prostitutes and those kind of things. But there were some respectable businesses along there. I know there was, I can remember, a Murphy's Curio Shop. There were businesses that catered to the railroad trade, because the railroad station was at Wall Avenue and 25th Street, right at the foot of 25th Street. So there was a hotel there and other things. But I've forgotten the exact address, but I believe the transfer business of Grandpa Hall's, and it was called City Transfer and Storage, was located on the south side of 25th Street, and I believe it was between Wall Avenue and Lincoln, probably about in the middle of the block. Now, my dad knew all the Jewish people in the pawn shops and the clothing business, and he had some Gentile, non-Mormon friends, too. I remember a fellow by the name of Murphy, who owned the corner and ran a curio shop, and I believe a kind of a lunch counter or something. I know he was a nice man, and my dad was friends of his all his life. But anyway, my Grandpa Hall, Henry C. Hall, had the first Model T truck. The initial business was with teams, see, horses pulling wagons to move people's furniture. And of course they were right by the railroad station, and they'd truck stuff from the rail that came on the railroad cars, they'd put it on their wagon and haul it to the customer in the area. But as soon as trucks came along, my Grandpa Hall got, I believe it was they called it a 3/4 ton truck in those days, maybe it's 1 ton. Model T truck, which Grandpa were here to tell us. I believe it was probably the first in Ogden. And this sort of gave them greater range. And they would truck stuff from the depot in Ogden, clear into Idaho, and clear into Wyoming and other places. Dad's told us some pretty good stories through the years on this trucking business.
Was it pretty successful?
Oh, yeah. My dad, my grandfather Hall, by my standards, was rich. My grandfather Henry C. Hall, of course, was non-Mormon. My dad was the first to join the church, and his mother and father opposed it a great deal. Gave a lot of opposition to it. They changed just before their death, but before that, they didn't think anything of Mormonism. And my grandfather Hall drank. He used whiskey like a lot of people did who weren't Mormons.
And some who were.
And some who were, I guess. And I suppose it's getting the better of him in his older years as he approached 70. And that was probably partly cause for the transfer business sort of going down the drain. My dad got out of it, and my dad's brother, Sam, carried it on for a little while, but it eventually just faded out. I guess it must have lost anything that had ever built up. I don't know how it was finally phased out. I don't know whether Grandpa owned that property on 25th Street or not. I would guess that he did.
I think that's interesting, because when I was on a debate trip at Weber, that was one of the big sights that we got to see, is the bus. Everybody got on the bus and they drove us down 25th Street so we could see all the prostitutes and the closed windows, and, you know, this was the gangster valley, and I can remember the creepy feeling I got going down 25th Street. I just was just sick the whole ride, but really interested.
Well, during Prohibition days, it was a street where you could buy the booze and where the prostitutes are located. Bishop Lofty in the 18th Ward once took us kids, I suppose we were 15, 16 years old, down 25th Street and pointed out where the brothels were.
That was a good thing to
do. Well, it just showing us what to beware of. And, you know, some kids could have been, young kids would be ignorant of what 25th Street was all about. And he took us down an alley, and showed us a pile of whiskey bottles. This was still during Prohibition, supposedly. And that pile of whiskey bottles was as tall as this ceiling, just one huge mound of whiskey bottles.
What was the matter with the local garbage collection?
Well, I imagine the police were in cahoots with everything that went on in Prohibition.
Well, they still are, from what we heard while we were there. The police were the ones who were keeping 25th Street going. I don't know if it's true, but that's
well,
what they all think.
Well, I got detoured, but what happened is that my grandmother used to shop at this Wilson's grocery where my mother was the bookkeeper. And
she'd send Howard
down to the store. And he'd see this pretty girl, you know. Apparently, Grandpa Hall was kind of bashful. Must have been. Go to age 32. I've never heard him talk about any girls. But he was always neatly dressed, apparently. He wore a hat, you know, and was always neatly dressed, according to my mother. So he'd go down there. Grandpa all smoked cigars in those days. And so they sort of started eyeing each other, I guess. I don't know how dating started, but at least that's where they met, and that was the beginning of things. But my mother, of course, recognized that Dad was a really fine, nice fellow, but of course he wasn't a Mormon. He hadn't been raised in an LDS home. He'd had one or two contacts with Mormons, one way or another, somewhere in Wilson Lane. I heard him mention a contact with Mormons. I don't know what the deal was.
He wanted to go
there
to dances. I remember that. His mother wouldn't let him.
But anyway, Grandmother Hall was a little bit, I don't know what you'd say, peculiar in some ways. She had five children herself?
Yeah.
She somehow got the idea that it was
sinful to have children.
And she didn't want Howard to have children, and she didn't want her son Sam to have children. And Sam never did. Sam got married late in life, and so did my dad. And I don't know. I suppose that she must have been hanging on to my father, you know, and keeping him away from girls and not letting him date one. I don't know, to a late age. It's strange, but in those days, I suppose parents had more control. You know, like taking all his money that he earned from age 11 for after he got married at age 31 or so.
This was just a standard practice.
But
you had to go out on your own, and then you could have your money. But if you, as long as you're in the parental home, you give everything to the
then
parent.
Anyway, as time went on, my dad started to see the light. By the way, my dad was a socialist at this time.
He used to get up on the soapbox.
Yeah, and he would go to City Hall Park in Ogden and stand on a soapbox and preach socialism. he's the biggest capitalist there ever was.
But he wasn't immoral or wild or anything like that.
I don't think so. I don't think at all.
Because he used to talk about the days in his youth when he was a socialist and a communist, and he sort of contrasts that with Mormonism.
He wasn't a communist, he was a socialist.
But I don't get that picture of him. At least from what my impression of Grandma, I don't think she would have married a man who was that way.
An idealistic type socialist, sure.
But anyway, I don't know what discussions he and Mom had, but he finally decided that the church was true, and having decided that, he said, I'll have to live the word of wisdom. Now, I guess he drank a little on occasion. I'm sure he didn't drink a lot, but his dad drank, and I guess his brothers did. So he said that when he decided to quit smoking, there wasn't anything to it. Just threw away his last cigar and never touched any tobacco from then henceforth, ever.
But he told me that he shook on his bed for 3 days.
Did he?
Yeah, when I was a little girl, I asked him if he gave up cigarettes. He told me that he just shook for a few days.
Might have done. But anyway,
but he got over it. He said
he didn't try to taper off or anything. He just made the decision to quit, and he quit. And of course, he had been drinking tea and coffee in his home all his life. Quit that and never tested again. Never tested any alcohol. And then, of course, came the issue of this railroad work. Good job. See, he'd been working on the railroad for 20 years. Really worked his way up.
And in Ogden, those were the best paying jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Knew about. They paid $200 a month. Railroad workers got $200 a month, and they were the rich people in town.
But with his idealism, he says, well, if I'm going to be a member of the church, I'm going to have to take my family to church. I can't work on Sundays anymore like the railroad had to do it. So he quit working on the railroad.
Now, this is after he had a lot of children, isn't it?
No, no.
Oh, no children.
He had a couple.
He may have had Gene and I.
It was after the war.
And of course, that's another thing. He went into the war before I was born, I guess.
You were born while he was in the service.
Was I? I used to know that relationship, but I've forgotten.
Anyway, and his brother died of flu while he was.
My father went to Camp Lewis in Washington and was in the trucking group. Teams, what did they call them? Anyway, with all his railroad and trucking experience, he was in a truck battalion that would deliver supplies to the front line, supposedly, something like that. But the war ended while he was in training at Camp Lewis. His brother Ralph, though, had been shipped overseas, this World War I, and was in England. And we had this great flu epidemic, you know, where people died by the tens of thousands.
No, kind of flu.
And Ralph got this bad flu and died in England, was buried over there.
Did they ever ship him home?
Yes. After the war was all over and things cleared away, if you wanted it, they would exhumed the body and shipped home. Ralph was shipped home. He's buried in Ogden City Cemetery. Let's see. Dad had an older brother, Eugene. And that's where my brother, Eugene, gets his name. Who died as a baby and is buried somewhere in Pocatello, Idaho area. It occurred when they were there. And Aunt Rose and I have been up there trying to find a record of the birth and
the death
cemetery or something. And we've never been able to locate any. And I think we must have asked Grandpa Hall about burial or something, and he knew nothing. Of course, he would have been younger, so he would have had it. Hadn't been born yet. Let's see. And then he had a Sam, who was the oldest brother. I don't know if Sam was older than Eugene or not. I forgot. Eugene may have been the first. And then there was Howard, my father, and then there was Ralph, and then the youngest was May.
Tracy's supposed to look a lot like Ralph.
Yeah. When I was young, walking around the streets of Ogden at age 17 or 18, occasionally a man would come up to me and say, "Hi, Ralph." And apparently I look a great deal like my Uncle Ralph. It used to happen a lot, not just in isolated instances. A lot of people would think
his,
I was
Ralph. And his wife said that she would see him sometimes and retake, double take, because he looked so much
like Aunt Grace. She never did remarry. She's still living. She lives in Pebble Beach, California. And she has been a widow for
Charlotte, shut that screen door. The bugs will fly in.
Approximately 55 years. She never remarried.
Just the screen.
I think I met her once. Doesn't she have peroxide blonde hair?
She's very attractive.
That'd be her daughter. Dorothy, probably. Well, let's see. Where were we?
You were saying when he quit the railroad.
Oh, he never did really have a good job after that. He went to insurance.
He tried to sell, and he
liked selling, but he wasn't a good salesman.
And he was a sucker for any salesman that came along. Anyone could sell him in.
He later on got a pretty good job in a creamery. A truck driver, I think, again. But Then when the crash came in 1929, something happened to that job. Somewhere along the line, he went back to work on the railroad. And you know, once you quit the railroad, then you're sort of at the bottom of the pile again. You lose all your seniority. So he took a job in Carlin, Nevada. And I must have been 5 or 6 years old, because these are some of my earliest memories. I can just barely remember them. We went on the train. We had free passes on the railroad because we were working on the rail. We went to Carlin, and we lived in a log cabin while we were there.
Now, where was this, Nevada?
Carlin, Nevada.
Yeah, we stopped there.
But it didn't stay there very long. Yeah, we went out and got a picture of the old little tiny church out there. Liz and Marty took it for us and mailed it to us.
We've got to take our camera.
But we didn't stay there very long. They had an electric generator in town, and they turned it on only one day a week. So you used kerosene or candlelight.
Or did your washing that day.
Did your washing the day they turned the electric power on in the town. I remember some interesting things about that town. I remember a lady who smoked a corn cob pipe, and that really seemed funny to Eugene and I. We thought that was a lady that smoked a corn cob pipe. In this little log house we rented, there was a player piano, which was fascinating to us. Some of the terrifying moments of my early life occurred in that town. There are big bullies in that town.
You had more big bullies?
Yeah, when I was little. When I was young, I was tiny. And I was really skinny and underweight. People thought I was going to die. I was so unhealthy looking all the time, so little. And I always got picked on by bigger boys. They look for a weakling to pick on. But they used to pick on Eugene and I both in that town an awful lot. And being a tough railroad town is really something. And the kids were tough. One incident, a kid got up on his house with his .22 and was shooting at his mom and dad. Wouldn't let any of his family members come near the house. That's the kind of town Carlin was. But some kids, and you know these metal culverts, the spiral kind of a galvanized pipe they put under a road and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, there was one just big enough for a little 4 or 5 year old kid to crawl in real tiny. And these kids enticed me to crawl in from one side and Eugene to crawl in from the other side. And then they built a fire at each end of the culvert.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never heard these stories.
Oh, you should hear some of the ones.
How did you get out?
You wouldn't turn around in them, would you?
No.
You couldn't get out. It's
a wonder we didn't get killed because the smoke came in, you know, and we were choking and gasping. I'm not quite sure how we were rescued from that. Kids will do things that they're going to scare you right up to the point of death, and then they're going to rescue you. Some older boys may have come along or something and moved the fire. See, you wouldn't have been able to get out without crawling through the fire. You'd have got burned. Kicked the fire away, and we got out. There were some other strange things in that. Little kids, you know, will get into everything. I can remember the railroad station.
Little kids like you.
And crawl space underneath it was held up by square posts, just maybe a foot and a half off the ground, and you could sort of crawl under the station. And the entire area underneath the station was matches.
That you could light?
Yeah, you could scratch them and light them.
Oh, boy.
And I guess kids had just gone under there and strewn matches under there for what mischief, I don't know. But I remember you going to that station any time, there just matches everywhere underneath the station. We only lived there for a short while, maybe about 6 months, and then we moved back to Ogden.
I bet your mother had something to do with that.
That period was sometime around 1927. And it may have been after that that he got the job at Nelson Rich Creamery.
Were you baptized then? Was that after you were baptized?
Oh, no. No, I could have only been
you were born
six. I hadn't gone to school yet.
You were
yet.
19, and if it's 27, that's
well,
eight.
Maybe that's too late. Maybe it's 25.
That's good. It would have been, because you were baptized and married.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm probably making this too old. I may have only been 4 or 5. And we were living on 16th Street. I was born on 16th Street. And then my dad and mom purchased a lot. I can remember going to this cherry orchard in Ogden on about 15th Street and Jefferson Avenue and walking across a plank across the Mill Creek. I can remember that. They bought this lot in this cherry orchard, new development, and we moved there and lived in a tent. And I can remember our piano being in a tent.
The same piano that you had all of the, all the time. Where did you get that piano? Did you remember?
My father bought that for his mother. And the mother gave it to us.
Where's that now? See. Who's got it now?
Oh, I don't know what's happened to it by now. It's gone.
I have a couple of questions. You've answered a lot of these, but maybe you can just describe your parents a little bit more, what they looked like, what their personalities were like.
Well, both of them were reserved and retiring and quiet. At least that's my impression.